I'm Alan Brady. You remember me from the Alan Brady Show?
Yes, if Alan needs any help.
Shut up, Mel.
Yes, sir.
Shut up, Mel.
Shut up, Mel.
Yes, sir.
I had the best TV writers on my show. Rob Petrie. Sally Rogers.
Hey, I got it. Don't anybody move.
And Buddy Sorrell.
Well, now you moved, I forgot it.
The legendary Carl Reiner has been at the center
Scott,
of...
Scott, before you...
Yes,
Dave,
sir.
I'd like to tell you something.
Yes, sir.
Shut up, Dave. That's Alan Brady talking, not
I
Carl.
Love that. I love that. He's got a new book out called Carl Reiner, Now You're 94, A Graphic Diary, although he just turned 95. And joining us tonight is comedy legend Carl Reiner. Carl!
Yes, yes, I'm here.
How are you, buddy?
I think I'm all right. I check every morning, and I'm okay this morning.
That's fantastic. Well, first of all, happy birthday. I mean, you celebrated your 95th birthday last week.
Yes, I did. I have a thing where I say, when you ask me how I am, by the way, my nephew George is doing a documentary on people vital over 90, and he called it Vital Over 90 until he decided to change it to... something I said to him once. I said, in the morning, I check, the first thing I do in the morning is check the obits. If I'm not in it, I'll have breakfast. So that's what I say, check the obits. If you're not in it, have breakfast.
And you can go on with the day. I love that. I love that. Well, congratulations on yet another book, Carl.
Yes, yes. This is Carl Reiner, Now You're 94. And it's a graphic diary. I asked Mel Brooks, I said, is anybody interested in the mundane things that somebody does just from the time he awakes in the morning, whatever happens during the day, whatever occurs? I said, has anybody ever done? He said, yes, a guy in 1720 did it, called 1600. Samuel Pepys did it, called it a diary. And I said, okay, that's what I'll do, and I'll add... To make mine different, I added 400 photos on very good paper. So this book is rather a large book, but it's pound for pound. It's not as important as any of Dostoevsky's book, but it pound for pound, it's worth its weight.
Well, yeah, these books that you've been putting out the last couple of years through randomcontent.com are really, I mean, they're beautiful books. I mean, these are beautiful, long-lasting coffee table books, and that's what I really love about them. And it's filled with photos, and I think that's what I love most, is you really get to walk through not only what you do every day, but there's some great photos reaching back. I was looking at this, when there's pictures in here when you were an MC at a summer resort, I think around the time that you met your wife.
Yes, that's where I met her, yes. It's funny, but I was on, I commend it to anybody who can watch Tavis Smiley this Friday at 11 o'clock. I do something that I call a public service. At the very beginning of the book, when I said it's my mundane life, what I do, when I was very young, not young, but I was about in my 30s, I slipped on an icy stairway and hurt my back. And the therapist said, you know something? He says, if you do these stretches I'm going to give you, don't get out of bed until you do them. For the rest of your life, you're going to be much healthier and more agile. So for 50 years, I have been doing these stretches, and they're all pictured in the book.
I know they are.
It's public service, because I actually, this happened to me about 3 weeks ago. I was going to promote my book on the Conan O'Brien Show, and I was coming down the stairs for breakfast, and I tripped. And I fell down a flight of stairs to the foyer, fell on my back, got right up, and I realized nothing hurt. And I realized it was because I do these exercises.
Amazing.
I'm limber yet at 90. Well, limber for a 95-year-old.
Right, exactly. No, I love the pictures. And I saw you posing in front of one of the billboards. I think I saw on your Twitter or Facebook page, it was you and Tavis Smiley as you were talking about, and your son Rob, I think, was with you. And there was pictures on the set. So, no, we'll absolutely look forward to that as well. But looking back at your life, and we've talked about this before, you know, and looking back at these pictures that are in the book, talking about you were in the military at some point, you trained as a a radio operator, and you got your first job in television performing. It was like a precursor to Saturday Night Live. It was called the Admiral Broadway Review. That was kind of what kicked it all off for you, wasn't it?
Well, that was what Sid Caesar and Max Liebman did, called the Admiral Broadway Review. That was a 13-week period. But from that, they made a show called the Show of Shows. That's when I was invited to come on your Show of Shows, which was in 1950.
Right. Legendary, legendary show. And I love, because I've got, like, I think it's 10 of your Show of Shows or whatever I have on DVD. But those are some of the most groundbreaking performances, the writing, everything.
It was written by a staff of writers that is incomparable. I mean, when you look, when you think of who they are and what they've accomplished, starting with, well, Mel Tolkien and Lucille Callan, two Canadians, he was the head writer, but along the way came Mel Brooks, Larry Gelbart, one of the great quipsters of all time, what's his name? I lost his name. I'll get it in one second. The one who wrote Candide and Hello, Dolly.
Yeah.
He was the fellow who used to put it all down. Stewart, Mike Stewart.
Yeah.
It's just a raft of brilliant writers. And I considered my college, sitting with those guys and listening. And of course, Neil Simon, Doc Simon, was one of the writers, one of the he's a genius writer. He's written 37. I don't use the word genius lightly. A genius has to turn out not only good work, one good work, but he has to turn out a lot of good work. Shakespeare would not be considered a genius if he just did Hamlet, did 37, yeah. As did Doc Simon,
yeah.
Neil Simon,
yeah.
37 plays and musicals.
But you're right, this team, legendary. There's never been, in really the history of television since then, when you look at that lineup of talent on the screen, behind the scenes,
right.
It's never happened again. I mean, really, it was absolutely phenomenal.
And Sid Caesar, who I was hired to be a straight man, and later on became, you know, a second banana, he was maybe the, not maybe, inarguably the greatest sketch artist that ever lived. I mean, he made things funnier than the writing on the page told him to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and again, you know, when you were on the doing the Dick Van Dyke Show, you played Alan Brady, of course. Did you model that role after Sid? Was it after Milton?
No, not
Burr?
At all. Because Sid Caesar was a pussycat.
Yeah.
We had lunch every day and dinner once a week at least. With Sid and the writers. No, it was modeled after. There were a bunch of comedians. The main one being Milton Berle, who was very nasty to his writers.
Yeah.
And what's his name?
Jackie Gleason.
Jackie Gleason, who never spoke to his writers.
Yeah.
He had them write the scripts and never talk to me. He said, "Slip them under the door of his hotel room." And then there was. What's his name? Phil Silvers, who did that Broadway show, which was based on an amalgam of all these, you know, terrible, terrible comedians.
Yeah.
So actually, it was not at all. Sid was a pussycat.
Right, but you know, looking at the writers' room, it was based a little bit on your experience in the writers' room. But again, Alan Brady based on another character, and you know, I know that. You know, probably one of the best ensembles in television. I will tell you straight out, and I'll tell anybody this, in the history of television, in my mind, the best sitcom still of all time today that stands up 50-plus years later is The Dick Van Dyke Show. Classic.
Yes, you know, and I'm very proud of that for two reasons. One, because when I started doing it, I knew I'd written 13 episodes, and when I made a pilot called Head of the Family, written for myself after I finished Show of Shows. I was offered situation comedies that weren't very good. My wife said, "Why don't you write one?" And I remember writing this for myself. It was called Head of the Family.
Right, right.
And it didn't sell. It was all right. I was with two very good actresses.
I've seen it. Oh, yeah.
He called me in, Sheldon Lennon. He read the scripts. He said, I love these 13 scripts. I said, no. I said, I'm sorry. I don't want to fail with the same material. I'd already started working on movies. And he said, you won't fail. We'll get a better actor to play you. And yeah. He suggested Dick Van Dyke. I went to see him in New York in Bye Bye Birdie. And, of course, he turned out to be one of the most talented human beings that ever lived.
Right.
And then finding Mary Tyler Moore was another great moment.
Which we just, you know, we lost Mary a couple months ago, and, you know, and really, she was such a young girl at the time. She was in her early 20s, I think.
And Mary came for an audition. She was after 33 people I'd seen, and she didn't even want to come in. She said she had failed twice that week at auditions. And I heard a ping in her voice when I gave her a line, a page to read, and I stopped her, and I looked at her and I said, look at those eyes and that hair and that smile. And I looked down and saw those magnificent legs. And I said, oh, I made my hand into a claw, the kind that at penny arcades. That
yeah.
Candy. I walked across the room. She thought I was going to cuss her. I grabbed the top of her head the way the claw would grab a candy. And I said, come with me, young lady. And I walked her down the hall to Sheldon's office. And I said, you're right, I found her.
Well, stick around more with the legendary Carl Reiner after this on 720 WGN.
About 4 days ago, a plane landed at Idlewild Airport. The plane came from the Middle East, bearing a man who claims to be 2,000 years old. He spent the last 6 days at the Mayo Clinic. Sir, is it true that you are 2,000 years old?
Oh, boy. Yes.
You are too. It's hard to believe, sir, because in the history of man, nobody's ever lived more than 167 years, as the man from Peru would claim to be. But you claim to be 2,000.
Yes, I'll be. I'm not yet. I'll be 2,000 October 16th. This month, yes.
You will be 2,000. When were you born?
We didn't have formal years and names and writing. We didn't know.
I see. And what?
Nobody kept time then. See, we didn't know. We didn't write. We just sat around. We pointed in the sky and we said, whoa, hot boy, you know?
That's all you said?
We didn't even know it was the sun. We thought.
You mean you really didn't know anything?
We didn't know anything. We were so dumb and stupid.
Sir.
We didn't know who was a lady.
But they were.
They was with us. We didn't know who they were. We didn't know who was the ladies and who was fellas.
You thought it was they were just different type of fellas.
Yes, just stronger or smaller or softer. The softer ones, I think, were ladies all the time.
What? How did you find out they were ladies?
A cute, fat guy could have mistaken the fellas. Soft and cute.
Who was the person who discovered the female?
Briney.
Who was Bernie?
Bernie, one of the feisty leaders of our group.
And he discovered the female.
Yes.
How did it happen?
He
How
said,
did it come
hey,
to pass?
There's ladies here.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to comedy legend Carl Reiner. Carl, you were on the Dick Van Dyke Show, one of my favorite episodes, and really I think the most talked about episode was the one that you wrote called Coast to Coast Big Mouth.
Laura, what the heck are you doing here? If you like to see ruins, why don't you go to Greece?
Really? You're not ruined, really.
First my leg, then my hair. What are you after, my liver?
Well, I came to apologize and to tell you personally that I'd like to try to explain.
Explain what? You got a big mouth.
I do. I know.
If you wanted a free rotisserie or a dryer, I would have gotten it for you. I would have gotten your house, a show place.
Oh, Alan, you don't have to do that. Alan, could I say something?
You got more to say?
Well, I've been thinking, Alan, and, well, for instance, I think you look very nice without your
hair?
Oh. Well, yes, and, well, for instance, now, I'm not saying this just because I'm in trouble, Alan, although goodness knows I am.
Oh, yes.
But believe me, sincerely, Alan, really sincerely, and you can ask anybody, I have always said that I like you so much better without your
It's hair! Hair! You didn't have any trouble saying it on television. When did you ever see me without my hair?
Well, a couple of times. Remember the time on your boat when you fell overboard?
You bumped into me.
No, you tripped over Rob.
You hear that, fellas? The whole family's after me.
Every time we got you in the hospital when you had your tonsils out.
Yeah, so?
Well, I remember telling Rob, and I told him to tell you. Did he ever tell you? Because I told him to tell you how very nice and natural and warm you look that way.
Sure, like a father figure, right?
Oh, no, Alan, just the opposite.
A bald mother figure?
No, Alan, like a very mature, warm, real person.
A little more snow in here, we can ski.
No, Alan, I really like your hair. Not on. Without it.
This is so... Why didn't you tell me this in private?
Well, I just didn't feel it was my place.
No, your place is on network television.
That was a historic thing for me for two reasons. One, the first... 2 years, the first 2 years, I had written about 30 of the first 40 episodes, and I was alone. I was my own story editor. I was my own head writer, and I was the writer and the producer. I was really lonely, and it was getting very hard. I would have imploded. And my nephew, George Shapiro, is also my manager, brought in two writers who brought a script with them, and I read the script. It's the one you just mentioned. And I said, my God, this is a great script. And if it weren't for him finding Bill Persky and his partner, Sam Denhoff, I told Persky to this day, I said, you know, you saved my life.
Wow.
Because if I hadn't found those guys, I would have not continued with the show.
No, Dick Van Dyke had told me about a year ago when I talked to him that you had your hands on everything and were playing and doing every single role single-handedly. You know, and
no,
yeah, that's
that lasted for 2 years. Yeah. 2 years, and if I hadn't found them, I wouldn't be here talking to you.
Yeah. You said, you know.
Oh yeah, the other thing I'm very proud of. This must have been said to me in three different not generations, but like 15 years apart. Three different groups of people have said to me, "I was a kid." This is what they said. They watched the show. They were very young at the time. And they thought, and they all had the same story. They were all funny kids, but they had no idea of ever going to perform. They were funny. And they realized there was a thing called a writer who wrote for the comedians. They thought the comedians made it up themselves.
Yeah, right.
And I must have heard that maybe 30, 40 times from different... That gives me more pleasure than anything.
That's awesome. Oh, that's awesome.
Some kids found out you can write... For comedians,
I would say that, you know, for my own personal sense of humor, I think I got some of that from just watching the show. The dry, deadpan, brilliant writing that was happening on a regular basis, I think that did that for a lot of people. Absolutely. You wrote an episode called "The Life and Love of Joe Coogan," and I've heard you say this before. You felt like that was one of the best shows you had ever written.
Yes, because Joe Coogan was a dear, dear, dear friend of mine. And what made him dear is I met him in the Army when I was a young comedian. I was on my way to Iwo Jima, and I was plucked out because I entertained someplace. And Major Maurice Evans and Captain Alan Ludden asked me to join their company, and I said, I can't. I'm going to Iwo Jima. I'd gone someplace. I didn't know it was Iwo Jima. They traded me out like a ball player, and then for the next year, I toured all of the Pacific, and Weetok, Saipan, Tinian, Guam, Palau, Mogmog, and ended up playing Iwo Jima for my buddies, who I hadn't seen in a year, and every one of them I was happy to say was alive. That didn't hurt.
Yeah.
But what was I getting at now? What was I getting
Best show you ever written?
You felt... Yes. The best show ever. What was the...
Life and Love of Joe Coogan.
Oh, yeah, yes. And Joe Coogan was in the Army with me, and he helped me with those sketches. When we got out of the war, he used to come to visit me all the time, and he was a very well... He was, as an Irishman... All Irishmen have the gift of gab, but he was very, very funny. He visited me every week to get his Social Security check office was near my house, and he visited. And I used to say, "Hey, Joe, he loved talking. He'd sometimes forget to go pick up his check." But he was that kind of guy. One day I said to him, I said, "Joe, you know, you write, you talk so funny. Why don't you write a short story? Just put it down on paper." And he did. He wrote a short story called The Lives and Loves of Augie Sheehan, I think it was called.
Okay.
A 1,000-word short story, which he sent to Collier's. They picked it up and said they'll buy it. And I remember him telling me, "Collier said they buy my story." And they said they'd give him $7.50 for it. And he said, "If they won't pay $10, I'm not giving it to them." We said, no, $750. No, I didn't say it to them. They said it to him. Anyway, he wrote the story, and it was a delightful story.
Yeah.
It was. And by the way, Collier said that was the first time in years that a first writer sold his first story. He's the one right before him. The only one before him was Ernest Hemingway, who sold his first 16 story to Collier's before he came. Anyway, so Joe Coogan wrote that story. And from then, I said to him, "Joe, you know, you should continue." I said, "You ought to go to college." And, you know, we had a GI Bill and go to writing, you know, take some literary courses. He took literary courses. He wrote a book called The Lives and Loves of Augie Sheehan, a very good novel. And from that, he continued to take courses and ended up as the dean of with emeritus at the Washington University.
Wow.
And his life teaching. And,
wow.
And so and that... I felt awful good about that. Joe, write something little 1,000-page thing. He made a life for himself.
Yeah, and it was one of the most classic episodes of the series as well. And I'm an old-time radio fan. You did a show on fading old-time radio stars. It was like Edwin Karp, and it was played by Richard Hayden, who was also in The Sound of Music. And you really captured the heart of what radio entertainment was in the 30s.
I love Richard Karp so much. And as a matter of fact, that was one of my favorite. I once heard there was a show called The Rudy Valley Show.
Mm-hmm.
And on the show, Rudy Valley had an impersonator. I loved impersonators. I used to listen to all the shows that had impersonators. And I started doing impersonations of Ronald Coleman and all the people I loved. Anyway, and one day he had an impersonator on. I said, "Oh, I got to hear this." And he said, "His name is Edwin Karp." It was Richard Hayden. He says, "Mr. Karp is going to do some impersonations for you now." And he came on with this very English accent. He says, "I am now going to do sounds of a fish, the sounds
right.
that you make."
Right.
"Because these sounds are so high-pitched that they're inaudible to the human ear. So listen carefully. Here is the yellow-bellied..." Oh, birds, he thinks he's going to do. That's right, birds. 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 This is a bird. "This is the yellow-bellied sapsucker. Listen carefully."
That's fantastic.
And for 1 minute, a minute on radio is a long time.
Oh,
for
1 minute,
there was no sound.
Yeah.
He said, "It's inaudible to the human ear." Said,
"That's fantastic."
And then he said, "Amazing, isn't it?"
That's great.
And I never forgot him. When I did that Van Dyke show, I did a tribute to old radio, and I had him on doing that.
That was great. Oh, that was absolutely classic.
He did these wonderful poems, too.
They
said it couldn't be done, but he, with a sneer, replied, I'll never be one who never die till I've tried." And he worked and he worked and he dug and he dug right in and he couldn't do it. I don't remember the thing.
It was
but
classic.
He made me laugh.
It was very funny. It was great. And really, again, captured a whole different era of entertainment to a whole different audience. Fast forward about a decade. I was looking at this in the 1970s, late 1970s. The Jerk with Steve Martin debuts, followed by All of Me, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. You played a huge role in launching the career of Steve Martin.
Well, Steve Martin was already a very well-known stand-up comedian.
Mm-hmm.
He played venues as many as 40,000 people in stadiums. And he did, by the way, he wrote maybe one of the best biographies ever written. He's a brilliant writer. It's called Born Standing Up, And it's lovely, it's funny, and it's so sad. But it is a great, great book. But for years, he would do stand-up, and he had not done, he had not acted with another actor. But when I came to do, you know, he had put together this thing called The Jerk, which is born of his original line in his act, "I was born a poor black boy," he used to say. Yeah. The whitest human being you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
He wrote a thing. I helped with the script a little bit, and we became really good friends at the end of that. It was such a wonderful, wonderful experience. And from that, we did The Man with Two Brains, which is, this is a movie that I commend to people to find if they can. It's a movie both he and I loved, and it was born of him saying, "I'd like to do a brain movie." And we sat and wrote this movie, and it was financed by a company that went out of business after we finished it. And they went out of business and was given over to or bought by Warner Brothers, who didn't even know they had it. They, they had no opening for it. But I tell you, anybody who's ever seen it, I once had a therapist who told me that he has a club of about 15 guys, and they play this movie once in a while, and he says every one of the guys recites every line from the thing as it goes.
That's
it's
awesome.
It's one of the movies ever.
And they are. All of these are.
You ever see Man with Two Brains?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. With Two Brains, Man with Two Brains, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. I've seen
Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid was my favorite work of all because it's 6 months of putting together black and white movies that, you know, it's like doing a crossword puzzle on Sunday and making it work.
Yeah. And then you did, you worked together with George Burns in Oh God, which
Yeah, Oh God. Yeah. That was, I'm going to tell you something very dirty. You can put it in. George Burns was just a love, and nobody could play God. You know, I said, "God, that's going to be a hard role to guess." Somebody mentioned George Burns, and I said, "Oh, he's the guy." Because in his program, the Burns and Allen show, he was always outside the house at the beginning of the show telling you what was going to happen inside the house. He had pre-knowledge of everything. So I said, "That's a godlike character." Anyway, we had a wonderful time together, and he was one of these guys that is dedicated. And I remember one time we had to change the shooting schedule. I said, "We're going to have to do another scene. You better look into it. You know, go to your trailer and learn it." He said, "No, I don't have to do that." He said, he memorized the whole movie before we even started.
Wow.
The last day of shooting, is one you can...
I love this story. I do want you to share it. I am going to air it. So we're on late night, so this is fine.
Oh, that's right. Well, you know what it is then.
Yeah.
I said, "What have I looked forward to sexually when I'm your age?" He says, "Carl, you ever try to put an oyster in a slot machine?" That was the line. He was a funny man.
That's fantastic. I love that. And I'm looking back, I mean, at everything, you know, the 2,000-year-old man. You did so many guest appearances in other shows like Mad About You, and you did an animated version of the Alan Brady Show. You did Parks and Rec, Two and a Half Men, Hot in Cleveland, American Dad, some animation in there. There's not one decade that I can look at and not see Carl Reiner present doing something funny. I mean, literally since the 1950s, you've been so much a part of the fabric of comedy in American life.
You know, I'm happy to do that. I mean, that's what I'm here for. But, you know, I did something the other day that I was so happy to do. I was invited by Sandra Bullock, who is my favorite actress, one of my all-time favorite actresses.
Cool.
Love everything she's done from the time I first saw her in The Net, which I play for people who have never seen it. And it's called Ocean's 8, where it's women going to rob the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And she had me, I play the character I played in Ocean's 11, Saul Bloom.
That's cool.
So I had a scene with her, and I just cherish that.
That's awesome. Oh, my God, that's awesome. And, you know, you just mentioned that you show other people movies that you really like. And I have to tell you this. The last time we spoke, you said to me, go get a movie. You told me off air, go get a movie. It's from the 1940s. It's called Random Harvest.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I've seen Random Harvest around 5 or 6 times. See, I'm an MC, and I always get pleasure in saying, here's Pavarotti and these things, and I get the pleasure that I told him to watch it. So when I have somebody who's not seen Random Harvest, I sit him on my couch, and I watch it with him and get vicarious secondhand pleasure watching them smile at the end and with a tear in their eye.
Yeah.
It's one of the most... It is the single most romantic movie ever made.
It is. It's a World War I movie, actually, from the that was made in the 1940s with Ronald.
It's about a guy with amnesia, and that's all we're going to tell you.
Yeah.
But if you don't get it, folks, you who are listening to us, you're missing something. And always sit with a loved one while you're watching it.
Yeah, very special movie. And then I was looking too. It was 7 Academy Award nominations too. So I mean, this movie obviously had some traction too, but yeah, I agree with you. It was not a movie that I would have thought of going and seeing myself, and I will tell you, it was fabulous. It's called Random Harvest.
It's on my one-handed list of favorite movies, the other being The Count of Monte Cristo, because that has comeuppance of terrible people that deserve the worst things to happen to them after doing worst things for poor Edmond Dantès. And then And believe it or not, there's no nepotism here, but if you ever want to smile and you feel low, watch The Princess Bride, Rob Reiner.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my name is Inigo Montoya. You'll kill my father. Prepare to die. I mean, just every line in that picture makes me smile.
It's a great movie.
And another one of Rob's is Harry Met Sally. You just smile when you watch it.
Yeah, and Estelle was in that. She was, I don't think a lot of people know that. Yeah, that was your wife.
He asked his mother to come to New York. She said, there must have been a million ladies in New York. And she said, oh, Mom, nobody can do it as funny as you. By the way, somebody told me something very funny, which I saw. You can get it on someplace on, one of those YouTubes or something. But the Katz's Delicatessen, where Estelle delivered that line, I'll have what she's having, after having an orgasm.
Yes.
Watching somebody have an orgasm. The guy, Mr. Katz, whoever owns the delicatessen, invited women to get free meals if they'll impersonate having an orgasm. So you see women all impersonating having an orgasm.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I don't know where I saw it, but you can look it up for something.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, I'll tell you, Carl Reiner continues to make us laugh. His new book, Carl Reiner, Now You're 94, Graphic Diaries, available now at randomcontent.com, where you can also have the book personally autographed for you as well. So how cool is that to have a book autographed by the great Carl Reiner? And we'll put that link at WGNradio.com and on the Dave Plyer Show Facebook page as well. Carl, always, always, always wonderful talking to you.
By the way, and I do commend you to watch Tavis Miley, because my son and I would talk about the fact that we're the first father and son to get our names, our handprints in Grauman's Chinese, which doing this next week.
Oh, you're doing that next week? You're getting your hands? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I hope I can bend over and get up from the floor to do it.
Hey, you're doing those exercises every morning. You're going to be able to do it.
Yes, I am. I'll be able to. And thank you so much for all the time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Carl, and have a great evening.
Thank you.
All right. It's 720 WGN.